I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times.
Friends, delegates, and fellow Americans, I humbly and gratefully accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States. Together, we will lead our party back to the White House, and we will lead our country back to safety, prosperity, and peace. We will be a country of generosity and warmth, but we will also be a country of law and order.
That was Donald Trump last night, now the official Republican candidate for president. This capped off an unconventional four-day convention in Cleveland marked by some controversies, angry calls to lock up Hillary Clinton, empty seats in the stadium, a non-endorsement by Ted Cruz in primetime, and an unusual group of celebrities. Well, Dave Davies was there all week reporting for WHYY, including Radio Times, the hardest working journalist that I know, and he's WHYY senior reporter. He also blogs at Newsworks. And Dave, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be with you, Marnie, as always.
As always. Well, it was a full house last night, not surprisingly. What was the mood, especially among the delegates from Pennsylvania that you were with?
Well, you know, they were it's an atmosphere where you can't help but feel the energy. You know, every delegation has a whip in Pennsylvania. It's a woman named Pat Poprick from Bucks County, and she gives hand signals on when you're supposed to stand up and all this stuff. And so, you know, there was a lot of excitement there, and the balloons and the confetti and all of it. To get a reaction to what these Pennsylvania delegates thought, I figured it would be better, rather than asking them directly, to just listen to their chatter on the delegate bus back to the hotel and at a reception that they attended after the convention. There's a reception here every night. And I did that, and I just didn't hear a lot. They just were not jazzed by this particularly. You know, my own take is that I think when Donald Trump uses a teleprompter, he loses his mojo. You know, his normal act. I've been to a few of his rallies.
Yeah.
You know, it's improv. He's riffing, and it's risky to him, but it's entertaining and it's full of energy. I think he just, you know, he was shouting every line with this artificially slow cadence that kind of dragged it out and just didn't kind of sound natural. All that said, I mean, I think, you know, he made the points that he wanted to make, and off he goes.
Off he goes, indeed. I'm curious because, Dave, we get to watch the delegates on TV cheering the candidate and sometimes booing. That happened this week as well. They're wearing hats. They're decked out in red, white, and blue. What is that delegate experience like from the inside? What is it like for them?
It's for them a lot of fun. I mean, seeing this up close, you realize that it's in a lot of ways a reward for their longtime service to the party and for their future service in the coming presidential campaign. You know, a lot of these delegates are people who have for years been toiling away in county Republican committees and rural parts of the states in a lot of cases. And for this, you know, they're brought in. They have to pay their own way to get here. But then, you know, they're made to feel really important for 4 days. You know, important elected officials come and they get selfies with them and with their Fox News stars when they meet them on the street. And it's a lot of fun. And they get, you know, treated to parties and receptions all week long, funded by, you know, lobbyists and law firms and corporations who want to be in with the party. And it's a lot of fun. There is, of course, also this whole discussion that's been ongoing about whether they're really together and behind this candidate. And that's been an interesting kind of debate to follow.
In fact, one of the delegates that you talked to, a guy named Bob Asher, who was a Kasich supporter, does he sort of represent perhaps some of the ambivalence in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, he's one species of those who aren't totally sold. I mean, there are others. I mean, I talked to the lone Ted Cruz delegate who cast a vote for Ted Cruz Tuesday night. And those conservatives are upset with Trump about his personal insults on Cruz and other things. So there's that crowd. And others like Asher, who just never really warmed to Trump, you know, his the sense that he is provocative and erratic and probably dangerous to other people along the ticket. But he's come around. He told me, look, this is over. If you like him, if you don't like him, just forget about it and let's get this thing done. And more importantly, he's the kind of insider. I mean, a lot of listeners may not know his name, but anybody who runs for office in Pennsylvania does, because he's a member of the Republican National Committee. He's a proven fundraiser. And when he's somebody you want on your team. And he has told me he is now agreed to hold a fundraiser at the Union League in September with the goal of raising $1 million. And to do that, he's going to recruit a bunch of people who will either raise or donate $100,000 each to the Trump Victory Fund, which I find interesting because, you know, you heard Trump last night saying how about Hillary Clinton is owned by the special interests and all that. Well, those $100,000 aren't going to come from, you know, folks who are just in love with Donald Trump. These are going to be the kinds of business people and law firms and lobbyists who want to have friends in the White House and are going to make those contributions in a lot of ways out of self-interest.
Well, this is the way we do presidential or campaign politics in this country. Let me get our two other guests to join the conversation. And joining us also from Cleveland is Joe Watkins. He's a Republican strategist, political commentator. He worked in the first Bush White House. You probably see him on MSNBC, where he is a regular contributor. And Joe Watkins, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Great to be with you.
Also with us and joining us here in our Philadelphia studio is James Peterson, also a frequent contributor to MSNBC. He happens to be director of Africana Studies and associate professor of English at Lehigh University. And he hosts the Remix podcast here at WHYY. And James Peterson, nice to have you back with
Good morning,
us on Radio
Ryan.
Times as well. And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY. To join WHYY.org to join the conversation. Already an explosion of comments on one of my screens here. Joe, you are there in Cleveland. What's your takeaway from these last 4 days?
Well, it was really quite interesting. I've been to a number of conventions, and there wasn't the kind of enthusiasm that you have seen at some of the conventions. But certainly there was lots of drama. And Ted Cruz provided lots of drama on Thursday night with his speech, and then there weren't we were missing, I guess, a lot of the well known big name Republicans. Certainly, some of the other candidates who had run for the presidency in this last cycle, former presidents, of course, and a number of other sitting governors and senators were not present. So that was missing this time. But I was here for the whole 4 day convention, and I think Donald Trump accomplished, I think, what he wanted to accomplish,
which was what, to bring the party together, or at least to bring enough of the party together.
I think he tried to bring the party together by outlining a common enemy, and I don't think that it's if I were running for president, I wouldn't be in the habit of calling my opponent the enemy, but for the sake of this campaign and what's happening now, I mean, the opponent has been painted as the cause of most of the problems that plague America. And he aligned everybody against Hillary Clinton. And that's what his speech was about last night, talking about how he would make America great again and what his plans would be to change current policy and to put people back to work, and how his opponent is somebody who would take America in the wrong direction and be disastrous for the country. And that's what he wanted to accomplish, and certainly he had a little more than an hour to say that on national television, so that's what he said. So I think he got done what he wanted to get done, and the question becomes is, how do Americans overall perceive it?
Well, James, he identified a number of enemies besides Hillary Clinton. He talked about ISIS. He talked about illegal immigrants. He talked about urban crime, something I hadn't heard him talk much about over the last 13 months. What was your takeaway?
I mean, it's interesting to hear people who are on the ground and who were there talk about the experience of being there, because it's how that maps onto my viewing of it from the TV screen. So when Dave Davis is talking about, it seemed like he was like shouting and that he was sort of, his pacing was not the usual because he was using the teleprompter. That's the way it came across on television. So it's interesting that it came across that way. in the actual space. It's also interesting to hear Reverend Watkins talk about Mr. Trump accomplishing what he wanted to accomplish. And because, you know, when you – I don't think he accomplished unifying the party, number one, right? Because you can't have a Republican National Convention without past presidents there, without certain sitting senators and elected folks. You can't have Ted Cruz do what he did. You can't have what happened with Melania Trump and all the things and think that that's a convention that's unifying. It might have been a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It might have been exciting. But that's – I don't think that's a unification move. And then – you know, the reason why his narrative about crime is so troubling, number one, is because we all know that violent crime in the U.S. has been falling precipitously since the 1990s. What he's doing
there have been some upticks in some individual
cities.
In
certain cities. But to sort of construct a narrative of alarmism around that is politics. And what he's doing is he's playing on the different conflicts that have occurred over the last couple of weeks with activists and with law enforcement. And what he realizes is that from a political perspective, making intervention there speaks to his base, which is to say that the folks who are disaffected from the Republican Party and feel like they're left out of the American political process are going to be very, very warm to the idea that he's a law and order candidate. That's a very compelling narrative for Donald Trump's base. And so in terms of accomplishing that politically, yes, he did that, I think, very, very effectively.
Dave, let me go back to you. You were with the delegation, and of course there are elected officials in Pennsylvania running for re-election. How do you see them positioning themselves with Donald Trump?
That's a good question. You know, I think elected officials who are in any kind of a re-election battle are going to remain wary. I mean, just look at their dilemma. I mean, if they endorse him now, they don't know what he's going to say on October 3rd that's going to make their lives a living hell. So they're just not going to be doing it. They're going to keep their distance. You know, the one thing I think that you can say is that the party, and Bob Asher said this, I mean, the one thing the party is unified around is their fear of and contempt for Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. And I just felt that all week long in the delegation. You know, there are a lot of moderate Republicans from the Philadelphia suburbs who are very much put off by a lot of the things that Donald Trump does and says, but they say, we just can't have Hillary. And so functionally, it may be pretty close to the same thing.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. We've got three guests who have joined us, and we are talking about the Republican National Convention that happened all this week in Cleveland. And, of course, Donald Trump's acceptance speech last night. Excuse me. The voice you just heard is Dave Davies. He's a senior reporter for WHYY. He's been reporting from Cleveland for WHYY throughout the week. You can read his off-mic blog at newsworks.org. Also with us is James Peterson, and he has a blog here at WHYY as well. It's called The Remix, and he's a frequent contributor to MSNBC, as is our other guest, Joe Watkins, also seen a lot on MSNBC, political commentator, worked in the George Herbert Walker Bush White House. 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Stay with us. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back.
We are going to build a great border wall to stop illegal immigration, to stop the gangs and the violence, and to stop the drugs from pouring into our communities.
Joe Watkins, is President Trump going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it?
Well, we will see, and time will tell. It's always easier during the course of a campaign to talk about what you're going to do. Much more challenging to actually get it done once you get elected, if you get elected. Having worked for a U.S. senator and worked for a U.S. president, you know, the process of actually getting something done is a lot tougher than a campaign promise. But I think his challenge is also to reach out to Latinos around the country and to say, I'm not anti-Latino. And to somehow or another have a message. He did that, for instance, with the LGBT community. I was really pleased to hear him say in his speech to reach out and say he was going to make sure that he protected the rights of the LGBTQ community. And I think that's important because the Republican platform hasn't really included any of that. So that's a good direction for the Republican Party to be taken. It's good to hear a Republican nominee say that.
Well, he said, because he got an applause for that, he looked kind of surprised, I have to say, that he got the applause.
It sounded like it was the first time he ever said LGBTQ in his life. But also short on specifics on exactly how he's going to protect that protected class. Reverend Watkins, Joe, you know I love you, but you also know that Donald Trump is not going to build a wall. You know that he only says that as a political tool to speak to the folks who have real fears about how immigration is changing the demographics of this country. Every single Mexican president, past presidents, the immediate past presidents, and the current presidents have vehemently sort of detested this particular remark and said specifically there is no way, absolutely no way, that the nation of Mexico will pay for a Donald Trump wall. Now, despite all the politics of that, we have to raise the question of what does it mean that this is a part of our political discourse? Like, what does it mean that the way that we want to, that some Americans, the way that we're approaching our immigration policy is to think about putting up a dividing wall, is to think about ostracizing and in some ways through Donald Trump's rhetoric, demonizing a particular population. I mean, it's taking the immigration discourse, I think, in the wrong direction for a nation that is quickly changing its demographics based upon our regional neighbors and based upon the ways in which, you know, sort of demographics work in the 21st century. So it's the wrong conversation to have in the first place, but it's also wrong-headed because it's not true.
Dave, I know you have to leave us in a couple of minutes. I'd be curious about how that played. I mean, clearly that's been an applause line for Donald Trump for the last, 12 or 13 months. Was it a big applause line for the Pennsylvania delegation?
Sure. I mean, James Peterson is right. I mean, he is stoking fear and hatred in a way that politically benefits him. There's no doubt about that. You played that clip. I mean, the whole address was in some ways kind of like Independence Day, right? I mean, doom is upon us. I mean, it's just there's run for the hills. And then, of course, he can make a long list of stuff he says he'll do. And since he doesn't, like, explain how he's going to do any of it, why not add something else to the list? I mean, a wall, LGBTQ rights. But the interesting thing that he didn't say last night was the phrase Crooked Hillary. You know, I mean, that's been his moniker all along. He referred to her as our opponent. And there was a moment when the chants of lock her up broke out. And he said, no, we will defeat her in November. And it's clear that there's something of a different tone he wanted to strike here. I mean, it may simply be that, you know, I think Hillary Clinton has really been hurt by the FBI report and especially by the fact that she has not responded to it and has not addressed the ways in which her previous comment about the email system are at odds with what the FBI director found. And I think it's hurt her. And, you know, one of the first rules of politics is if your opponent is self-destructing, leave them alone.
Yeah.
It's a little strong to say she's self-destructing. That's not happening. But I think it's moving his way, and it's interesting that he decided to strike a different tone, you know, less personally hostile to her. Whereas, as James just noted, I mean, he's certainly kind of stoking the flames of fear and hatred for other folks.
Well, Dave, I know you have to go. I want to thank you from all of us here at WHYY for your hard work in Cleveland, for
definitely
all your reporting, helping us understand what has been going on all week at the Republican National Convention. So, Dave, see you in a couple days.
Yeah.
And, for part two here in Philadelphia.
right. James, Joe, nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Dave.
Same here, Dave.
And that's, of course, so long, Dave. Dave Davies, senior reporter for WHYY. You can read his off-mic blog at newsworks.org. Staying with us for the rest of the hour, James Peterson and Joe Watkins. Joe joining us from Cleveland. James here with us in our Philadelphia studio. A lot of people want to join the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Got a lot of emails, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes. I do want to throw something, though, to you, Joe. And one thing I noticed last night, not in the speech, was his call to deport something like 11 million immigrants who are here illegally. And again, that has been an applause line for him for a year now. I didn't hear it sort of the way he talked about the wall. Do you think that's significant?
I do. I think that there are some attempts to soften the message to not be as inflammatory. I think there's some effort to try to be a little bit more presidential calling his opponent Crooked Hillary doesn't sound very presidential. It was certainly effective for him during the primary season, but I think going into the general election, we want to steer clear of that kind of rhetoric and look more presidential. I know there are lots of people advising him to appear more presidential in his deportment.
I want to talk to you, James, only because we were talking about this before the air. Ivanka Trump, his daughter, mm-hmm. introducing him, talking about things like equal pay for women, for parental leave, for family leave. It was a sort of striking contrast.
Sounds like a DNC talking point list there for that particular speech. But Ivanka Trump is supposed to represent a much more softened version of the Trump brand, a much more accessible version of the Trump brand for women in particular. Whether or not she accomplishes that is a little bit trickier. I mean, it depends on, like, to what extent do we believe what they say? To what extent, and really, to what extent do you believe what any politician says in the context of a national convention? I think that's going to go the same for the DNC as the RNC. Do we believe what they say, or is it just rhetoric? And rhetoric intended specifically to persuade folks to vote a certain way without thinking about the substance of what anyone's policies or political activity is actually going to be. And so in terms of the political theater of it, Ivanka Trump, I think, represents a more softened version of the Trump brand.
And do you think, Joe, an attempt to appeal to women who have not signed on in great numbers to Donald Trump?
Absolutely, absolutely. She presents a younger face and a strong face for women within the campaign. And so I thought her speech was very good last night. I mean, Donald Trump has not had a lot of success so far in attracting women voters to his campaign, especially running against the first woman nominee for the presidency. But having his daughter say what she said last night, I thought was a big step for him.
But does that take back the things that he has said about women, individual women, whether they're running against him or whether they're interviewing him, Joe?
I think he hopes that it does.
There's no way that it's an interesting attempt. But here's the thing, because misogyny is going to play a role in this political process. One of the reasons why Trump can back off of some of his direct attacks at Hillary Clinton is because the reality is that there's a threat of misogyny amongst his base, but also across America, that's going to reject even the idea of having a woman president. And so he doesn't have to say that. That's unspoken. That just is what it is. Some of the hatred and vitriol directed at Hillary Clinton has nothing to do with her politics and policies, right? I don't agree with a lot of her hawkins or a lot of her policies, but I can sense that there's a level of hatred there that I would sort of categorize as sort of the kind of misogyny in the atmosphere.
Well, and I think that the trick with Hillary is it hatred because she's Hillary Clinton or because she's a woman?
It's both. And I think discerning between the two is what gets really, really tricky. We're not going to be able to do that. But amongst Donald Trump's most ardent supporters, that sort of invisible misogyny is very, very comfortable there amongst some of those folks. Again, that's throughout the whole nation, but we're never going to separate between the folks who, between this idea of hatred towards Hillary Clinton versus how much of that is like pure misogyny. But I can tell you it's there.
Let me get some callers in. Looks like we've got Paul from Wildwood. Then I'll read a bunch of tweets and comments and emails as well. Paul, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. Real quick, I just have to reply to what the gentleman just said. I have even heard women say that they will not, even progressive women, that they can't see a female president. So I think that misogyny is definitely here. But my comment that I wanted to make about last night was that Trump looks to me kind of like he's already living the lifestyle of a head of state. If you think about Idi Amin or Muammar Gaddafi, he jets around to these various palaces and flaunts his wealth and makes fun of people who oppose him or he doesn't like. And I just wonder what a Trump presidency would look like. And bear in mind that he has to go to trial. Law and order candidate is going to have to go to trial for fraudulent practices with his Trump University. So that, to me, doesn't talk about law and order.
Paul,
and that's enough.
I know you could go on, but I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Joe, let me toss that back to you. And are you still a Republican? I know you've been a Republican. I hate to do this to you on the air. You confuse me sometimes.
No, I'm still a Republican.
Okay.
I just think it's important for the party to be bigger. and to be a much bigger tent than it has been. And it certainly did not look like a big tent at the convention. I mean, there was not a lot of diversity at the convention, and I could count probably on two hands the number of people of color that I saw, certainly, at the convention. There were delegates. And so the party has a long way to go still, but no, I'm still a Republican. I'm not running away. Both parties have challenges within them and have distances yet to travel to be everything they're supposed to be. And so I'm still here. I'm still a Republican, and, okay. and not happy about everything that every Republican says, but I'm still here.
Yeah, I mean, both candidates, James, have baggage, clearly.
Absolutely. I think both candidates only represent certain factions or fractions of their parties. Hillary Clinton does not represent the progressive wing of the DNC. And although people try to say that Donald Trump represents the populist wing of the RNC, I don't know if there is a populist wing, but he represents a certain segment of folks who identify with Republican politics for a very complicated morass of things that have to do with, like, being left out of the economic system, things that have to do with the racialized nature of 21st century politics in terms of demographic shifts, very complicated group of folks that kind of we saw with the Tea Party rise. But Donald Trump speaks to those folks. So they're speaking to very specific parts of their parties and not necessarily representing what their parties are. But back to the caller's comments, we were just talking about how folks overseas look at Donald Trump.
In fact, you were just in Ghana.
I was just in Ghana. So there's this irony, this interesting irony where folks in Ghana are kind of like, well, Trump is everything that you guys criticize certain African leaders for being. So how do you square that? And your caller spoke specifically to that. Also, another reason why he has to back off the crooked Hillary piece is because it will be revealed that he's had some of his own challenges with the law. I mean, once we finally get what his tax returns are, and I think folks will realize that he probably pays little or no taxes, they're going to wonder how he circumvented law himself. And it's hard to be the law and order candidate when you have some legal challenges yourself.
Let me read a couple of emails, and we'll get back to our callers. Neil says, in 75 minutes of talking, Trump did not say the word climate. Email from Sally, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Trump has created such an atmosphere of fear that it's scary. Facebook comment from James. Can they talk about Peter Thiel's I'm not sure I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Thiel's speech. And Joe, you were probably there last night. And he's a businessman, very wealthy businessman. He also happens to be gay. And when you kind of square that with the platform, what did you make of his speech?
Well, I'm glad that he spoke. I'm glad that he was heard. I think you have to give people who don't agree with the platform a chance to be heard, and because the platform doesn't represent every Republican. And so at the end of the day, I'm glad he had a chance to be heard. We just have a long way to go. If our tent doesn't get bigger, if our party doesn't truly have love for all of its neighbors, for people who are LGBTQ, for people who are African-American and Latino, and for women and for young people, and anybody else, it's going to be hard for us to be the majority party. Now, I could be all wrong. I could be all wet. We could win the presidential election in November and still be not very diverse. But I think going forward, if the party is going to be the best that it possibly can be for the country and for the country's future, it has to be a lot more diverse than it is.
And his last name is pronounced Thiel. My mistake. Let me get Bob from media to join us. Hi, Bob. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, Maury. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, there's been a lot of talk about how it was a different Republican convention this year, but the one thing that seems to never waver is that they do a lot of fear-mongering, and they present absolutely no ideas, unless you want to count Paul Ryan's address to the Pennsylvania delegation, in which he rehashed the only two Republican ideas they've had in the last 50 years, which is lower taxes on corporations and deregulation. And that's my comment. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, fair enough. James, you want to comment on his comment?
Well, I think that just to be honest and a little bit objective here, fear-mongering is a centerpiece of American politics, period. You'll see it a little bit better disguised in the DNC, where they'll be saying, hey, if you don't vote for Hillary Clinton, it's going to be Donald Trump ruling and destroying the world. Fear-mongering is a part of American politics. It's very sad to see it at the intensity that it exists, especially at the RNC, and it's very sad that there are entire populations in this country who are motivated by fear more than anything else when it comes to the political process.
Just one little note there, and I'm glad that we have a caller here who raised it, and I'm quoting here from Donald Trump last night. He said, as your president, I'll do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens from the violence and oppression of a hateful foreign ideology. I mean, what he's saying, Joe, is he's going to protect them from Islam.
Well, yeah, that's actually, I guess, what it says, is that he's going to...
It is.
Not just from Islam, from radical Islam, especially, but that's what his statement actually said. But I think to most people listening, just the mention of the LGBT community coming from Donald Trump was a big thing, especially at a convention, at a red meat convention, you know, where the audience, including Donald Trump, wasn't expecting them to respond in quite the way that they did. And the fact that they gave him a round of applause caused him to stop and say, thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate your response to what I just said. So, but people can change and can grow. And just because folks have been one way for much of their lives doesn't mean that they can't evolve into something bigger and better. And so, I think this is a good movement that having this discussion and coming to love our brothers and sisters who happen to be part of the LGBTQ community is a good thing for the Republican Party.
Well, you know what? And I see Christine Tom Whitman. She's going to join us after this break. We got about 45 seconds. James Peterson.
Donald Trump needs to hire Reverend Watkins right now. That particular line is a triumph of one thing that Donald Trump says he hates, which is political correctness, right? He's saying something that he wants to make a political statement about without saying anything about it at all. The only way he can even put that acronym into his speech is to tie it to fears around ISIS and around some of the most recent events in terms of how his base sees, you know, the sort of encroachment on American rights of this foreign entity. That has absolute or very little to do with what LGBTQIA issues are here in the United States, right? And so it's a political trick, right? It's a way of getting the acronym in there to say, hey, I'm about this, I'm trying to grow. And he's not growing at all, because the political move is indicative of exactly the way politics works in the U.S. and exactly what Donald Trump has exploited throughout his entire campaign.
We have to end on that note. Always a pleasure to talk to both of you. Joe Watkins, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Always good to be with you.
Always good to have you with us. He's a regular contributor to MSNBC, as is our other guest, James Peterson. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks, Marty. Good to talk to you, Joe.
And you can check out, in fact, you should check out James Peterson's podcast. It's called The Remix, and you can hear it on WHYY. And Christy Todd Whitman after the break. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Moscoen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Earlier this year, former New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman told the Star-Ledger that if Donald Trump was the Republican nominee for president, she might vote for Hillary Clinton. Last month, she wrote a guest column for the Star-Ledger saying she was deeply troubled by the FBI report on Clinton's use of a server that Director James Comey had called extremely careless. Well, we asked Governor Whitman to join us, and just so you know exactly who she is, Governor of New Jersey from 1994 to 2001. She also served as administrator of the EPA in the presidency of the administration of George W. Bush, and currently running the Whitman Strategy Group, and that's an environment consulting firm. And Governor Whitman, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be with you, Marty.
So did anything that Donald Trump say last night or that happened in Cleveland over the last 4 days change your mind?
Not overall, no. I mean, I was happy to hear him mention LGBTQ. How much he means with that, I don't know. But it was a good thing to throw in there for Republicans to hear. You know, it's hard to pin him down because his opinions seem to change and his position seemed to change. But he still, I didn't hear a lot of substance behind what he said. He kept saying, I'm going to lay out my plan. And then he didn't. He just said he's going to make everything better, which is great. And it's what people want. And of course, they want to hear it. But we've got to start hearing how. He is not going to be a dictator. He is not going to be able to wave a magic wand and ignore laws or the Congress or the Supreme Court. So it's still, I think, a very questionable outline of where he's going to be. It's hard to know. And of course, where he has staked out positions that he hasn't changed on are areas with which I disagree with him. And I did hear a lot of appeal to divisiveness last night. Let's put it that way. I won't be as blatant as to say hatred, but divisiveness. He might have mentioned the LGBTQ community, but what he said about implied that every people were dying in the streets because of immigrants who were coming across the borders is just wrong, and it's unleashing motions that are going to be hard to put back in the box.
Has he hurt your party?
Well, he's certainly forcing it that so that after this election, I believe my party is going to have a really hard think about who and what it is. And those of us who do not subscribe to what we're hearing, do not subscribe to the very most conservative positions, that many of which are outlined in the party platform, which was largely written by the Trump supporters, are going to have to decide, are we still part of this? And the Democrats are looking at the same thing on their side of the aisle. There are a lot of them who aren't comfortable with how far Hillary has gone to the left because of Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Bill de Blasio. So both parties are going to have a rethink. They're leaving the people in the middle kind of stuck.
Well, I know you're supporting something called Better for America, I guess, looking for a third party candidate. Is the clock ticking on this if we've got an election in November?
It is. I mean, we have to be on the ballot in 14 states by the 1st of August. We're on the ballot in 12, and I just haven't been I haven't been updated recently to know whether that's whether we've gotten the 14 yet. We should. That should not be the big hurdle. After that, it becomes the really difficult thing. And until you are able to show someone who is really credible, the kind of candidate you want, that in fact you will be competitive and on ballots and you have the money to do that, it's going to be hard to get the right person. But with the negatives of both of these candidates, each of these candidates so high, I just want to try to give other people who are like me another option.
Who would represent you besides you? I mean, who would be the person who could represent your values, your beliefs, your policies?
No, there are a lot of people. That's why I ran as a John Kasich delegate at large in New Jersey. I agree with him on a great number of things. Not everything, but there's nobody you agree with on everything, and you don't expect that. But it was someone whom I respected as having had the kind of experience that we need to bring the country back together and actually be able to make it run.
I am curious, and I've asked other people who are Republicans who are uncomfortable with their party today, just how you think Donald Trump was able to speak to people who self-identify as Republicans and speak to their frustration, their anger, their worries, and some of the maybe more darker aspects of their personalities and belief systems.
Well, actually, many of them who voted for him in the primary had never voted in the Republican primaries before. So whether they've always been Republicans or not, I'm just not sure, or what faction of the Republican Party. But listen, he's tapped frustration, and it's understandable because Congress and government has been letting people down. It's been dysfunctional for at least the last decade, if not more. People are angry. They're scared. They're frustrated. And he is playing on that. Now, I think they're going to be very disappointed if should he be elected, because he's not going to do the things that he says he's going to do. He can't. A lot of it he just can't do. And much of it is not going to be good. I don't think that right now people, I don't think, are looking behind. All they want to hear is they want someone who is positively saying, I'm going to get things solved. It was like the speech last night, and people reacted very well to that, and people in the audience and others. There are some I've talked to who reacted well to it because they said he's going to get it done, but didn't tell you how. He didn't tell you what path, what things he would do in order to accomplish that. And I don't think he knows, because a lot of it he can't do.
I mentioned the fact that earlier this year you were at least toying with the idea that you might vote for Hillary Clinton. I read the article that you had most recently in the Star Ledger. You are deeply troubled about the server and the FBI report. Where do you stand on her candidacy?
Well, I mean, she is deeply flawed, but I will say that at least her flaws are kind of within parameters that we have seen before in flawed presidents. You know what seems to motivate her. You know what she might do. You have a better idea of what she might do. You might not like that, but at least you have an idea. With Donald Trump, I don't think you have a clue.
So at least with a Hillary Clinton, and I'm not trying to get you to endorse her or whatever, but I am curious about, let's say it's November 1st. The two candidates are absolutely neck and neck. What would you do, Governor Whitman?
Well, I'll have to see how the campaign spin out. I don't see myself voting for Donald Trump. I can always write in if I can't bring myself to vote for Hillary Clinton, but I'll have to wait and see.
Right. I mean, what would she have to do or say in order to get you into her camp?
There's no one thing. I am going to be watching, obviously, as so many Americans are now, which is one good thing about this election. It's actually getting people to understand the importance of elections and voting. You know, I'm just going to be watching very carefully and seeing what she has to say. Does she move ever further to the left? That's going to be troublesome to me because I'm not in the Bernie Sanders camp. So it's more of the balance, and I'm hoping that we can find it somewhere.
Well, let me get some callers in, and we got some comments as well, and you can join the conversation. We are talking to former New Jersey Governor Christine Todd Whitman, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, especially if you are kind of struggling or on the fence, as Governor Whitman clearly is. Let me get Carl from Red Hill to join us on Radio Times. And Carl, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I wanted to ask Governor her thoughts on two Republican, successful two-term Republican governors, Gary Johnson and William Wells, who are currently Libertarians.
Running
in the 90s.
And Carl, Carl, we don't have the greatest phone line, but wants to know about how you feel, Governor Whitman, about Gary Johnson, William Wells.
The Libertarian, and they are on the ballot, and they both are former governors. In fact, we were all governors together. Gary Johnson's been down this road before. He's run for the presidency in the past and has never been able to garner enough support to even be a blip on the screen. And, you know, when you have a candidate who said, I'll stop smoking pot in order to have a clear head to run for the election, I mean, I'm glad he did it. Because I'd like him to have a clear head, but that just is not going to, I believe, attract many voters. And so I don't think that Gary, and much as I like them as people, and Bill Weld, and respect him as a governor, are going to be able to break through. And that's why I'm continuing to look for someone else.
Well, and we had a caller earlier in this week that said if it were switched, if William Wells were the presidential candidate and Gary Johnson the vice president, he might be more interested in thinking about them.
No, I think that's true.
I'm curious about, and I'm sure you watched a lot of the convention, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was booed. There was some other booing as well. And even your response to the current governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, essentially indicting Hillary Clinton and getting the crowd to chant, lock her up. What's your take on that?
Well, I was troubled by the locker up. I mean, that's just way over the top and unnecessary. What Chris's speech was, look, it was appealing to the base that was there at the convention. They loved it. They got into it. It's a political convention. Those kinds of things happen, and people watch that, and then they get over it and go on. I didn't like the locker up because, again, that is starting to get people to think in those terms, and it gets to be a much more bitter, nasty type of campaign. And that's not what we need. We need a thoughtful discussion on the issues. So that was too bad. What puzzled me, I mean, things like I'm trying to figure out the political advantage to having had Ted Cruz speak, because obviously that Donald Trump knew what he was going to say, had the speech ahead of time, and he timed his entrance into the hall to step all over it. I mean, maybe it was a petty vindictiveness on his part. He wanted to get back at Ted Cruz, let him go out there and say what he was going to say. They had orchestrated and made sure people booed. I think they were going to anyway, but they had operatives around the floor who had already primed people to boo when he said that. And Trump, he had timed his entrance to come in to get people to look at him and get it away from Ted Cruz. But it completely stepped on his vice president's speech. And he's the one who can make the link between Donald Trump and the most conservative members of the party. And he gave a very good speech. And yet nobody talked about it. All everybody talked about was Ted Cruz.
Well, and it did seem very personal, even coming from Ted Cruz, basically saying, look at what Donald Trump said about my father, sort of implicating that he might have had something to do with the JFK assassination. And look at the comment or the tweet that he sent about my wife, comparing it to his wife, Melania. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of my question is who does that?
I don't know. But then you look at what I've seen on in some of the Twitter feeds of what the Sanders supporters are proposing to do at the Democrat convention when Hillary Clinton accepts the nomination. I think they're all planning to sit on whoopee cushions at the same time. I mean, really? Is this what our campaigns have come to, where we have a candidate who compares his hands to other parts of his anatomy and defends his manhood, and other people are talking about sitting on whoopee cushions? It's just really disappointing.
Well, and I have to say, just to underscore that, I don't want to linger on it too long. We did have some demonstrators in earlier this month talking about eating beans so that they could sort of add to their belief that mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton's going to stink the whole thing up. But, you know, pretty juvenile yeah. stuff, if I can
pretty
say
juvenile.
That.
Pretty juvenile.
Let me get Karen from Wilmington, Delaware, to join our conversation. And, Karen, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
Thank you, Marty. Hi, Governor Whitman. I simply wanted to say to you that I wish you were the candidate. I am a lifelong Democrat. I feel that you are... you would get my vote, even though you're in the opposing party. I just feel like we need a reasoned, you know, woman with absolutely wonderful credentials and obviously a fantastic character. I really appreciate you, and that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you. That's very nice of you. I'm afraid my party wouldn't let me in the front door right now.
I mean,
but,
do you...
You know, what
no,
the
go ahead.
People
go
are
ahead.
Saying is what we need is we don't have to be enemies. We can disagree on issues. We can disagree on our candidates. But we don't have to hate each other. It doesn't make the other person a bad person. And yet we've now come to this mm-hmm. position where you're not... I can't disagree with you without you being my enemy. And that's not good for the health of our democracy.
Would you consider maybe not a run for the presidency, but getting back into politics?
I don't see ever running for office again because I can't imagine what I'd run for. Serving policy has always interested me, so I want to stay involved in policy. And as long as I do that, I'm happy. And I'm happy right now. Plus, I've got 6 great grandsons, and I'm finally going to get a granddaughter. So it's all going to be good.
Congratulations on that. I did notice, and obviously you were the administrator of the EPA in the Bush administration, when you look at the platform coming out of the Republican Party, doesn't sound like Christy Todd Whitman wrote that.
No, and that is enormously troubling to me. You know, something that people don't realize, the most recent year for which we have numbers is 2013. 91,000 people in this country died from airborne dirty air, airborne-related problems, whether it was asthma attacks, heart attacks, lung cancer, emphysema. That's almost 3 times as many people who died on the roads in that year in car accidents. 3 times as many.
Wow.
And yet we have a candidate who's talking about rolling back environmental protections, environmental laws, going back to coal. I mean, we can't do that. That's just wrong. It's wrong for our quality of life. It's wrong for the future. It's wrong for us today and wrong for our children and grandchildren.
I was thinking about your comment that, you know, there has to be some way that people can get along. And I wonder if, weirdly, when we learned that Melania Trump actually admires Michelle Obama, whether that was at least a moment of comity coming out of Cleveland.
Well, I think it might have been. It was certainly a comedy. I mean, the real problem there for them, again, it's another time when they stepped on their own story, is instead of just fessing up, say, look, it was just a mistake. She was reading from the speech over the phone to the speechwriter, thought it was her own words, but she admires it. And it shouldn't have happened, but too bad. We'll move on. It's not a big deal. She gave a good speech, especially for someone for whom English is not her primary language.
Yeah.
We got to understand that.
I
have to get off.
I think you do. I'm going to let you go.
I do. Yeah. Okay.
Governor Whitman, thank you so much for joining us.
It was a pleasure. Good to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you as well. And again, Christine Todd Whitman, a 2-time governor of New Jersey, also served in the cabinet of President George W. Bush as administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency. And she currently runs the Whitman Strategy Group, and that's an environmental consulting firm. And that's it for today's, the first hour of Radio Times. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about the show. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us, and do stay with us for hour 2. We'll be right back.